The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Without freedom of the press, no democratic form of government could exist.
We switch you now to London.
I'm standing on a rooftop, looking out over London.
Good night, and good luck.
Good evening from our CBS newsroom in New York.
NBC presents Chet Huntley and David Brinkley.
From ABC, this is World News Tonight. With Peter Jennings in London, Max Robinson in Chicago, and from our desk in Washington, Frank Rendell.
Good evening.
This historic legislation, the telecommunications law, will create many, many high wage jobs, will create opportunity and better lives for all Americans.
When the press is free, the people of a country are free. When the press is not free, the people of a country are in danger of slavery.
Keeping you informed with information, news, and the views of people making the news. It's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
All right. Good afternoon. Welcome to a Wednesday. I am Nicole Sandler, coming to you live at NicoleSandler.com through the magic of tape delay on the Progressive Voices Network, where we're now heard from 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern on Tuesdays through Fridays. Another busy day out of this shoot. It starts with Trump actually keeping one of his campaign promises, but one of the ones that shows that he just seems to be clueless. Here's a little bit, just a little bit, of his remarks from just about 2 hours ago.
Today, we finally acknowledge the obvious, that Jerusalem is Israel's capital. This is nothing more or less than a recognition of reality. It is also the right thing to do. It's something that has to be done. That is why, consistent with the Jerusalem Embassy Act, I am also directing the State Department to begin preparation to move the American Embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. This will immediately begin the process of hiring architects, engineers, and planners so that a new embassy, when completed, will be a magnificent tribute to peace. In making these announcements, I also want to make one point very clear.
Yeah.
This decision is not intended in any way to reflect a departure from our strong commitment to facilitate a lasting peace agreement. We want an agreement that is a great deal for the Israelis.
Sure you do.
And a great deal for the Palestinians.
Sure you do.
We are not taking a position of any final status issues, including the specific boundaries of the Israeli sovereignty in Jerusalem or the resolution of contested borders.
Aye.
Those questions are up to the parties involved. The United States remains deeply committed to helping facilitate a peace agreement that is acceptable to both sides.
Nonsense.
I intend to do everything in my power to help forge such an agreement.
Okay, so meanwhile, the Palestinian president says Trump's announcement on Jerusalem is a, quote, declaration of withdrawal from the peace process. Not only that, but they have begun 3 days of rage in Gaza to protest this. This is not good. Already, the leaders of many other Middle Eastern states have come out and condemned this move. And by the way, I don't know what Trump was sniffing, but did you hear him by the very end? He was God blessing everybody. And then he said this.
And God bless the United States.
The what? God bless the what?
And God bless the United States.
The United States. Okay, good to know. Anyway, so that happened today. The other thing that happened today is, and I hate this, I just so hate this, but yet another woman has come forward to say that Al Franken groped her. This one, a former Democratic congressional aide, said Al Franken tried to forcibly kiss her after a taping of his radio show in 2006. That was 3 years before he became a senator. Politico is holding her name to protect her identity. I'm sorry. I wish, you know, and I get the reason why a lot of women don't speak up, But it's just a lot more impactful when you are not anonymous. Just saying. But she told Politico that Franken pursued her after her boss had left the studio. She said she was gathering her belongings to follow him out of the room. When she turned around, Franken was in her face. I'm reading to you from Politico here. The former staffer ducked to avoid Franken's lips. As she hastily left the room, she said Franken told her, quote, "It's my right as an entertainer." And she said, "He was between me and the door and he was coming at me to kiss me. It was very quick, and I think my brain had to work really hard to be like, wait, what is happening? But I knew whatever was happening was not right, and I ducked," she said in an interview. "I was really startled by it, and I just sort of booked it toward the door," and he said, "It's my right as an entertainer." The former staffer, who was in her mid-20s at the time of the incident, said she did not respond to Franken. The woman said she had never met him prior to this incident. Franken was elected to the Senate in 2008, but began ramping up his political activity in 2006. Of course, he was on Air America. Now, yes, I was on Air America for its last year on the air, but I never worked out of the Air America studios. I mean, I did a couple of times when I was visiting New York, but I did my show from my Florida home the same way I do now. So I never worked closely with him, but everybody that I've spoken to finds these allegations hard to believe, which is why I was so late to the party, I suppose. But as you know, it seems like each day brings forth another victim. I hate it because Al Franken is somebody I really like and up till now really respected. But, you know, as I say, and when I talk about Roy Moore and I talk about Donald Trump and John Conyers, is where there's this much smoke, there's usually fire. And today it started with a Facebook and tweets by Kirsten Gillibrand calling on Franken to step down. And it was followed by a parade of Senate Democrats. The list now, and I was trying to keep the running list. At this point, it might be easier to say who's not calling for his resignation. It's Feinstein, Harris, Bennett, Carper, Hirono, Durbin, Donnelly, Markey, Warren, Stabenow, McCaskill, Heitkamp, Hassan, Heinrich, Gillibrand, Brown, Merkley, Casey, Leahy, Cantwell, Murray, Baldwin, Wyden, and just in the last few minutes, even Senator Bernie Sanders has called for Senator Franken to stand down. Now, for his part, he said he'll be making an announcement tomorrow. His office announced that he will make an announcement tomorrow amid growing calls among fellow Democratic senators for him to resign. His office did not release details on the nature of his announcement, but so far, 7 women have accused Franken of sexual misconduct. You know, aside from the fact that it's Al Franken, somebody I had always liked and admired, that makes it hard to reconcile this and makes it hard for me to say, yes, at this point he needs to go, especially since Minnesota has a Democratic governor in Mark Dayton who will get to appoint Franken's successor. The other thing that I really hate about it is the fact that it's always the Democrat to go. John Conyers, and yes, John Conyers needed to go, and he's gone. Al Franken, now it looks like he needs to go, and he's a Democrat. And yet the allegations against him are nowhere near as heinous as they are against Roy Moore or Donald Trump, for that matter. Yet those two are still there. Blake Farenthold, a Republican congressman from Texas, who we, the taxpayers, paid out $82,000 on his behalf to settle a sexual misconduct case. He says he's going to pay it back, but he's not offering to resign. He just said he won't run for re-election. There's something seriously wrong here because there's a massive double standard. And while at this point I do think Al Franken needs to go, I think these Republicans need to go as well. I think Roy Moore needs to not be elected, people of Alabama. If he is elected, I think he needs to be not seated. And Donald Trump needs to go. There needs to be an investigation. Why did this guy get a pass? Because he said, "I didn't do it. I totally didn't do it. They're all lying." Would it have been better if Al Franken said they're all lying? Well, I guess there's that picture of him with his hands hovering above Leanne Tweeden's breasts. He was not grabbing them. You can see the shadows under his hands. But, you know, the fact that I'm having to defend him in this fact really sucks. The thing that is so disconcerting, well, there's a lot that's disconcerting, but the fact that, you know, the Democrats always go from Elliot Spitzer to Anthony Weiner to Eric Massa, remember him? And the Republicans stay in office. David Vitter. What was the guy's name in Nevada? I can picture him with the white hair. I can't think of his name. You have instance after instance where the Republicans stay put, but the Democrats leave. We got to fix that one. All right. Today, we're going to take a look into the Masterpiece Cake Shop case that went before the Supreme Court today. But first, a look at what's news.
I read the news today, oh boy.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Donald Trump is set to deliver a speech midday Wednesday in which he'll recognize Jerusalem as Israel's capital, but he'll sign a six-month waiver maintaining the embassy's current location in Tel Aviv because the process of moving will take at least 3 or 4 years.
The majority of Israeli politicians have enthusiastically advocated for this day, but when you look at it, Israel has a lot to lose. First off, if the United States does go forward with this plan, it doesn't mean the international community is going to do it. Also, it could have a backlash effect with not just Arab countries, but other countries around the world. But also, you have to look at the peace process, and that's something that President Trump has invested a lot into. He's called it the ultimate deal. He sent his son-in-law, Jared Kushner, to come and work on it. And every Palestinian official we've spoken with says if they go forward with this plan, the peace deal is essentially done. The Americans lose their seat at the table and they can't be credible. So real consequences for potential peace.
Trump is making the announcement despite criticism from numerous U.S. allies, including France, Jordan, and Saudi Arabia, which have urged him to avoid the extremely sensitive topic. Protests have already broken out in the Gaza Strip in response to the expected decision, as Palestinian leaders have called for 3 days of rage against the move. On a Detroit radio show Tuesday afternoon, Representative John Conyers made it official. He's retired.
I am retiring today, and I want everyone to know how much I appreciate the support, the incredible, undiminished support I've received across the years from my supporters, not only in my district, but across the country as well.
So, people, you have it here on the Mildred Gatta Show. You heard it here. Congressman Conyers announces his retirement as of today. He has also said during this interview he is supporting his son, John Conyers III, to replace him. Congressman, as you exit this interview, do you still maintain that the allegations that have been leveled against you are false?
Whatever they are not accurate, or they're not true, and I think that they're something that I can't explain where they came from.
The latest allegation against Conyers comes from a woman who accused him of sliding his hand up her skirt while sitting in the front row of a church. On a related note, Time Magazine's editor-in-chief Edward Felsenthal announced their Person of the Year Wednesday morning.
The 2017 Person of the Year is the Silence Breakers, the voices that launched a movement. This is the fastest moving social change we've seen in decades. And it began with individual acts of courage by hundreds of women and some men too, who came forward to tell their own stories of sexual harassment and assault.
We see celebrities on your cover, but most importantly, perhaps, we see someone whose face is obscured. Yeah. This is the woman whose name we don't know, the woman who came forward bravely or is thinking about doing so.
One of the important things we explore in our coverage around the issue is, of course, the parade of headlines is nonstop and incredible to see, but We look at the degree to which this is really just the beginning, and how far will it go, how deep into the country, mm-hmm. how long lasting. The image you see partially on the cover is of a woman we talked to, a hospital worker in the middle of the country who doesn't feel like she shared her story with us and some others, but doesn't feel that she can come forward without threatening her livelihood.
The International Olympic Committee on Tuesday announced that it has banned Russia from the 2018 Winter Olympic Games for having manipulated the game's anti-doping system.
The Russian Olympic Committee is suspended with immediate effect. Individual clean Russian athletes will be able to participate under strict conditions at the Olympic Winter Games Pyeongchang 2018. These invited athletes will participate, be it in individual or team competitions, under the name Olympic Athlete from Russia, with the acronym OAR.
Individual athletes who test clean for performance-enhancing drugs, however, will be allowed to compete for the upcoming Pyeongchang Games as neutral individuals under the Olympic flag. The first gun legislation since the largest mass shooting in U.S. history could be voted on as early as Wednesday in the House of Representatives. But instead of making us safer, the Concealed Carry Reciprocity Act would expand the ability of out-of-state visitors to carry concealed weapons across state lines. Opponents of the legislation warned that it would allow the states with the loosest permitting standards to define the laws of the nation and would undermine states' rights to protect their own residents. The NRA has called it their highest legislative priority. I got the And that's a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, now heard Tuesday through Friday from 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern on the Progressive Voices Network, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is 100% listener-funded, and I really can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com/donate. And for a bit more of news that's going on today, we turn to our friends at the Talk Media News Service. They're at talkmedianews.com. And on the line today is Ellen Ratner. Hey, Ellen.
How are you doing? Well, there's quite a bit. You know, the thing about Donald Trump is there's never a dull moment.
Nope. I'm longing for a dull moment.
I am, too. So is everybody else. But we're not going to get one. There's quite a bit of news going on. First of all, I want to talk about Al Franken. He's going to announce tomorrow whether he's going to continue or not. Everybody's guess is that he does not. Mark Dayton is the governor of Minnesota, and he's a Democrat, so he would appoint a Democrat. Whether he decides to appoint a woman or whether he decides to go with Keith Ellison, who is a Muslim, that is remains to be seen.
Right. I'd love to see Ellison get in there.
Well, most of us would.
Yeah. We'll see. It's just so sad. What's so sad, Ellen, is that it's always the Democrats who leave. Conyers, who I thought needed to leave, stepped down. But you have Roy Moore, who will likely be elected next week. You have Donald Trump sitting in the Oval Office. You have Blake,
and they don't go.
And they don't go. Blake Fahrenthold, who said he won't run for re-election, but he's still sitting there in the House of Representatives, and no one's calling for his, for him to resign. The double standard is sickening.
Well, yes, and the fact is that, again, had President Clinton done what President Trump has done, he'd be gone faster than the speed of light.
Oh, yes, without a doubt.
Okay, there's some other interesting news that is going on. First of all, speaking of that, Time magazine has five people on the cover. They've named their persons of the year, the Silence Breakers, and the people who did the Me Too hashtag. So
right, although they are coming under a little bit of criticism because the woman who started the Me Too campaign, whose name eludes me at the moment, was not pictured on the cover. She is in the article inside, but she is not pictured on the cover, which some people are taking as a slight.
Right. Well, I don't know how Time magazine decides what they do, but at least they don't have Donald Trump there this year.
That's true, and that's good.
Okay. Now, it's very interesting. Fentanyl seizures have gone up considerably because the Drug Enforcement Agency and the people at the borders are more aware of what they are. But so few little flakes of fentanyl can cause so many problems and can cause people to get high and even die that they can be sent through the U.S. mail or through the inter-country mail.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a major concern of people.
As it should be. That's scary stuff.
It's very, very scary stuff. Okay. Your friend Donald Trump Yeah. I know he's not your friend. But he announced Jerusalem as the capital and the move of the embassy. Now, it's very interesting. I have a cousin, Aaron David Miller, who is a talking head at CNN, and he was the Mideast peace negotiator for about 20-plus years, one of the two. And he was so well-known on both sides that when his son got bar mitzvahed, Chairman Arafat sent him a letter of congratulations. So he does not approve of this, and neither do I. I think that this is just going to inflame things over there. I was just over there last week, as you know, and Tel Aviv is only, when there's no traffic, 45 minutes from Jerusalem. Just leave the embassy there and forget it.
And he's talking about, you know, getting architects and starting plans. I mean, who's paying for this? I thought, you know, we can't afford anything.
Well, they're saying they want to do it in affordability. But they have, somebody said, you want to make a embassy in Jerusalem, why don't you just change the sign at the consulate and call it the U.S. Embassy?
Yeah, exactly.
And that's all they needed to do.
Although,
course,
we don't want them to do it.
Spend taxpayer money, because if you don't spend taxpayer money, I mean, where are you? Speaking of taxpayer money, it looks like the CIA does not trust its own people. And so now they're talking to Eric Prince, who, as you know, got into all that trouble in Iraq. He is the brother of the education secretary, Betsy DeVos, and he now has Blackwater. And now they're thinking of contracting with Blackwater to do a private spy agency.
Unbelievable. I don't know how
that's legal. I mean, you cannot make this stuff up.
No, you can't make this stuff up, because Trump needs his own private spy agency.
And they don't trust people in the CIA? Give me a break. It's just unbelievable. I know what they've tried to do in South Sudan. What they're trying to do is to do a private air ambulance service to get NGOs out. That's non-government agencies, non-government organizations, nonprofits, essentially, out if there's a medical problem, and then they'll make money that way. I mean, the guy is always just looking for ways to make money.
Yeah. Well, and that's Trump's MO. That's and he's not very good at it either. He loses money, but he's got certainly enough people bamboozled to believe he knows how to make money.
For sure, for sure. Also, it is interesting. Some former people from the Bush administration and the Obama administration have filed an amicus brief with the courts, saying that the Trump administration's unlawful investigation into the voting history of Americans should be turned down. Because, as you know, Trump put together a voting group to look into people's records, and they have requested enormous amounts of records from various states. And people are fighting back on that.
Well, good. Because this is that Kris Kobach voting commission that, and they're looking for all kinds of information on all of us that they have no reason to
have. They want to find out how you registered, when you voted, what elections you voted in. Give me a break.
Who you voted for, and more. They're asking for all kinds of information, including social security numbers and stuff. I mean, the it's very far reaching, the information that they're requesting. I don't know what good this will do, but any effort to protect our data, I guess, is warranted at this point.
Well, that's for sure. And so they are filing a friend of the court on that. And as you know, I mean, there were lots of friend of the courts on the cake decorating case, which I actually think is going to be really, is a cake an artistic creation, or is it a public accommodation such as a hotel room? And that's what this case is going to be boiled down to.
Yeah, in fact, that's what we're going to deal with in the interview segment coming up in a few minutes with Sarah Posner of The Nation. And the sad thing is, from many of the court observers who were there, they seem to think, you know, Justice Kennedy is going to be the swing vote. And they seem to think that he's moving in that direction, that he's moving towards the direction of the Baker.
Yeah, I'm afraid that it's not going to be good news, but I think that one of the justices asked, well, you know, how about a chef? Is that considered artistic?
Right.
I mean, you have where do you draw the line?
I know there was a joke. One of them said, well, what about a makeup artist? It even says artist in their name.
Right. David Cole was the arguer for the two gay men. Now, it's very interesting. David Cole was a very good friend of my brother's. I dedicated a book to him, wrote his obituary, and he's married to Nina Pillard, who is a federal judge on an appeals court. Her father, who I worked with, was the first openly gay psychiatrist in the United States.
Oh, wow.
So there's a lot of connections there, and I think he was probably doing this from the heart when he
right.
was defending.
He's with the ACLU.
That's right.
Right. Yeah, one of the things we're going to talk about is the group who was representing the Baker, the group ADF, and I don't know if you know much about them, but we're going to get into who they are and why they're so frightening. The scary people, the Southern Poverty Law
Center.
Well,
outside the court, there were all these people from the Westboro Baptist Church and, you know, just screaming that gays are going to go to hell. I mean, they're just whack birds.
Yes, and that's the ADF is as well. Southern Poverty Law Center has deemed them a hate group.
A hate group, yes, absolutely.
So we're going to get into
well,
that.
Well, it doesn't stop. We're always busy.
Yes, we are. Ellen Ratner from the Talk Media News Service at talkmedianews.com. As always, thank you, Ellen.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. All right. As I mentioned, we do have a guest coming up. It's Sarah Posner of The Nation and The Nation Institute, who did an extensive article on the Christian legal army behind Masterpiece Cake Shop. It's a special investigation into the rise of Alliance Defending Freedom. That's what ADF stands for. And I'll tell you, you do want to hear this because what they're doing in the name of religious freedom should scare the bejesus out of you if there's any bejesus in you. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back on the other side with Sarah Posner next. I'm Nicole Sandler, NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Can tax reform go so far to the right that it's just plain wrong? Hear about Donald Trump's tax plan today on Hightower's Radio Lowdown. Sam Rayburn, a legendary speaker of the U.S. House in the 1940s and 50s, offered this piece of ethical advice for lawmakers who were conflicted over whether to vote for the people or the lobbyists. Every now and then, he said, a politician ought to do something just because it's right. Wow! Ethics! How quaint. Today's House Speaker, Paul Ryan, has perverted Rayburn's ethics, advising his Republican majority to vote for anything just because it's right-wing. Along with Donald Trump and Senate leader Mitch McConnell, Ryan is now trying to push America's tax law so far to the right that it's horribly wrong. Tax proposals can be complex, but this 429-page monster is shockingly easy to understand. The Trump-Ryan-McConnell triumvirate intends to take money from millions of working families and give it to the world's wealthiest people and richest multinational corporations. Of course, when they talk publicly about their proposal, they claim it's all about helping you working stiffs. It's, quote, real tax reform for everyday hardworking Americans, trumpeted our president. In private, though, they reveal to their biggest campaign donors that the plan lets them help themselves to the people's money, giving these corporate elites a huge windfall. The biggest ever, bragged Trump. In fact, the 400 richest families in America would average $5.5 million in new tax breaks. Meanwhile, if your income is under $75,000 a year, you'll end up worse off. This is Jim Hightower saying, forget trickle-down economics. The GOP is practicing tinkle-down economics. Why would they push such an evil, shameful policy? Because it's not you common voters they care about. It's the moneyed elites who fund their re-election campaigns. As one Republican pusher of this tax giveaway to the rich put it, my donors are basically saying, get it done or don't ever call me again.
Need an antidote to the progressive blues? Want some good news about how grassroots folks are rebelling against the corporate powers and winning? Well, here's an easy-to-swallow pill for you, the Hightower Lowdown. Hightower's monthly newsletter will give you the lowdown, even as it lifts you up. It's 4 pages a month, jam-packed with facts you can use, actions you can take, and Jim's own Texas humor, all for only $15 a year. To become a lowdowner, go to HightowerLowdown.org.
This is a huge, huge issue.
And we're talking about it.
The Nicole Sandler Show on Progressive Voices and NicoleSandler.com.
Sarah Posner is an investigative journalist, author, and expert on the intersection of religion and politics, whose work has appeared in Rolling Stone, The New York Times, Washington Post, Mother Jones, The Nation, and many others. It's at The Nation as part of the investigative fund at The Nation Institute, where Sarah's article, The Christian Legal Army Behind Masterpiece Cake Shop, a special investigation into the rise of Alliance Defending Freedom, appears. Sarah, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
Sure. I want to get into what happened at the Supreme Court yesterday. You have another piece up at The Nation about it. But first, I want to talk about the Alliance Defending Freedom, or the ADF. Who are they?
Well, the ADF was founded back in 1993 by James Dobson, you know, the founder of Focus on the Family.
Oh, yeah.
And a bunch of other religious right luminaries. They were worried at the time that the advance of LGBT rights posed a threat to the religious freedom of Christians in America. And they sought to build a Christian counterpart to the ACLU, which would litigate cases on behalf of Christians whose rights they claim are under threat by LGBT people, secularism, reproductive rights, and so on. And they set out to not only build a law firm, a legal law firm with staff attorneys to do these things, but to build a legal army of outside attorneys who would agree to be allied with them and be co-counsel and litigate cases with them. They also have trained law students for many years. 1,800 law students across America have been trained in their Christian worldview of the law. So when you look at the totality of what they've done in terms of training lawyers and future lawyers, there are several thousand lawyers across America who have been trained to litigate cases and to view the law and jurisprudence through their quote-unquote Christian view of the law.
And they seem to be spreading towards, you know, they're all tentacles of government. Trump has appointed a number of them to federal judgeships, even at least one who has been deemed not qualified by the American Bar Association. They're working their way through all parts of government, aren't they?
Well, they are definitely, these lawyers, ADF staff counsel, as well as the outside allied attorneys and graduates of its Blackstone Legal Fellowship Program, are very well connected in the conservative legal world and the conservative advocacy world. So they're, that has given them access to appointments to serve in state attorney general's offices, to be appointed to other positions in state and local government, and as well as political appointees in the Trump administration. And as you say, four of Trump's judicial nominees have a connection to ADF.
Wow. Now, the case heard yesterday at the Supreme Court was Masterpiece Cake Shop versus Colorado Civil Rights Commission. Did I read correctly that the U.S. Solicitor General, Noel Francisco, was arguing in favor of the bakery along with an ADF attorney?
Yes. So, I mean, that's certainly the prerogative of the Solicitor General to get involved in a case that in which the United States has an interest. But there were a lot of questions about, well, what is the United States' interest in this particular case? Because the Masterpiece Cake Shop is basically looking to constrain the application of a civil rights law. And I think most of us think of the Justice Department as enforcing the civil rights laws, not arguing to constrain them.
Right.
But again, Francisco does have a connection to ADF as well. He revealed on his disclosure forms that he had to fill out for his nomination process with the Senate that he had spoken on a Blackstone Fellowship panel on law firm recruiting. And ADF's website touted him as one of their allied attorneys in two press releases that they put out in 2016. After our story went to press, ADF claimed that those press releases had been mistaken, and they scrubbed the website of any reference of Francisco being an allied attorney with them.
Wow. Okay. Well, Jeff Sessions, I mean, a number of people in the Bush administration and cabinet are working with them. Jeff Sessions, as attorney general, filed an amicus brief. Did he on this case?
Right. And so, you know, once you said Bush administration, Trump administration.
Oh, Trump administration. Sorry. Freudian slip.
Okay. Yeah. So, yes. So the DOJ filed an amicus brief in this case, and Francisco asked for argument time. And again, the filing of the amicus brief was really considered quite extraordinary by Supreme Court watchers and First Amendment experts. Because, as I said, the Department of Justice is charged with enforcing civil rights laws, and they were intervening in a case that's arguing for the constriction of a state civil rights law. And the Justice Department intervened in another ADF case in Georgia, where ADF is representing a college student who attended Georgia Gwinnett College and charged that the school violated his free speech and free exercise rights by asking him to stop evangelizing on a patio outside the library. The school has these designated free speech zones, which is where a student is allowed to stand on a soapbox and distribute literature and so forth. Mm-hmm. And he was in violation of that, and they are charging that that violates his First Amendment rights. The Department of Justice intervened in that case, too. The university has moved to dismiss the case, and the Department of Justice intervened to say to the judge, hey, we think this case should not be dismissed. And Attorney General Sessions has said publicly that one of the reasons why that case in particular was of interest to him was that it implicated, because he's interested in campus free speech cases, but that case also implicated religious freedom rights, and that's why that case in particular was of interest to DOJ to intervene in.
Now, was the ADF the interested party, I guess, in the Hobby Lobby case? Were they defending the Hobby Lobby people?
So, ADF represented Conestoga Wood, which was the company whose case was consolidated with Hobby Lobby. So, yes, they represented Conestoga Wood and several other corporate corporate plaintiffs in those cases, as well as nonprofits who sued because they claimed that the accommodation that was made for them in the regulation also still violated their religious freedom.
And back then, under the Obama administration, his Justice Department, they were the ones, or I'm sorry, his Solicitor General was representing the country against this, right? I mean, this is a complete 180.
Right. Well, so the Solicitor General represents the United States. Those lawsuits were against the United States government. So that was his job, to defend the United States in those challenges to the contraception benefit requirement under the Affordable Care Act. But in this case, the U.S. government was not a party in the Masterpiece Cake Shop case. But, you know, in rare instances, the government will intervene when there's an important federal interest or interest of the federal government at stake. And I think that what people found remarkable and curious about that in this instance, in the Masterpiece Cake Shop instance, is that, you know, as I said, the Justice Department is charged with enforcing civil rights laws, and they signaled with their intervention in Masterpiece Cake Shop that perhaps they think it's okay for religion to constrain the application of civil rights laws.
Wow. Betsy DeVos and the Prince family, she's Eric Prince's sister, they're big benefactors of the ADF. In fact, and in her confirmation hearing, didn't she try to disavow any connection there?
Yes, her parents' charitable foundation has donated north of $1 million over the years to ADF. When asked about it in her confirmation hearing, DeVos claimed that it was a clerical error that she was listed as an officer on the foundation's tax returns. So again, you know, here we have an instance of something being pretty clear on paper in black and white, and a claim that it was a mistake.
Amazing. Roy Moore is part of this as well, right? He founded, ironically, the Foundation for Moral Law. Is that for real?
that is for real. And his Foundation for Moral Law, this but much smaller Christian right law firm, it received a grant from ADF this year because ADF is interested in challenging the adoption by states of an American Bar Association model ethics rule that basically would subject an attorney to professional discipline for saying things that were discriminatory or doing things that were discriminatory against, you know, people based on race, sexual orientation, gender identity, sex, national origin, et cetera. ADF says that this violates lawyers' First Amendment rights, and they're urging states not to adopt it. They hired or they gave a grant to the Foundation for Moral Law to study this question for them.
Yeah, the Southern Poverty Law Center labeled the ADF a hate group.
Yes. That was the Southern Poverty Law Center made that designation based on the disparagement and demeaning of LGBTQ people by ADF. ADF has pushed back heavily on this hate group designation and has really, and this came through in the oral arguments yesterday too, basically making the argument that, you know, you should not equate us with, you know, white supremacists and neo-Nazis because, you know, for one thing, we don't hate gay people, and race is different from sexual orientation. Race is not a choice. Therefore, they really have strained to present themselves as not being anti-LGBT, but rather pro the rights of Christians to speak out or refuse to serve LGBT people.
But by saying that race is not a choice, they're inferring that one's sexual orientation is a choice.
Exactly.
Wow. Now, you wrote, it's foundational narrative that conservative Christians in particular face persecution in the U.S. No other conservative Christian legal organization has propelled so many attorneys into state and federal government where they are now in positions to oversee the restructuring of civil rights and First Amendment law in ADF's mold. They're focused almost exclusively on the religious rights of Christians. In fact, you pointed out, I think, only like four examples where other religions were invoked. This is all about Christianity, isn't it?
Yes. And, you know, it's funny that they might object to that characterization because they claim that they also advocate for the rights of the religious rights of others. But, you know, the fact is they're very open about the fact that they're a Christian organization defending the rights of Christians. And even when they've intervened in cases involving minority religions, it's really been, you know, really more on technical grounds rather than as a full-throated defense of minority religious rights. So, for example, they filed an amicus brief in the challenge to Trump's second Muslim ban. Mm-hmm. And they did not weigh in on the merits of the ban itself, but they wanted to object to the district courts using Trump's tweets and public statements as evidence of the religious animus behind the Muslim ban. They basically argued to the court that the court should just look at the four corners of the document, of the Muslim ban itself, and not listen to anything that Trump said, either on Twitter or in speeches or what have you, to determine whether that violated the Establishment Clause. And that's a really, you know, if that argument were to be accepted by the courts, then that would mean that a public official could go out and say, I'm about to issue a regulation or sign a bill into law that is going to ensure that we're going to be safe from the Muslim terrorists, or is going to ensure that Christians will have the right to pray in school or whatever, but then write the law or regulation in a supposedly neutral way, and the court would not be able to consider what the public official said. Well, obviously, like, that would not be an appropriate way of evaluating Establishment Clause claims. So it was an interesting take on that case, let me say.
I'll bet. you said you reviewed a number of ADF's brief, right? And you found that the organization repeatedly argued in court that sexual orientation is not a suspect class, and as such, that laws denying LGBTQ rights should not be subject to strict scrutiny. They're saying again that's because this is a matter of choice, not a matter of the way you're born.
That's right. So they vociferously supported statewide bans on same-sex marriage in the run-up to the Supreme Court's 2015 decision in Obergefell. They supported Proposition 8 in California that bans same-sex marriage. So their work in that case goes back to like the 2004, early 2000s. And in those cases, they repeatedly argued that these bans on same-sex marriage should not be subject to the kind of scrutiny for an equal protection claim that that laws that discriminate on the basis of race are subject to, because again, that either saying or suggesting that homosexuality is a choice and therefore not the sort of classification that would trigger that kind of scrutiny by the courts.
It is stunning. What do you think? I mean, this is 2017, and we're having this argument before the Supreme Court. The ramifications of this are pretty far-reaching, or are they more narrow in scope? I mean, are they just talking about the right of this cake, this baker, to not serve gay couples, or does this have much further-reaching ramifications?
Well, that obviously depends on how broadly or narrowly the Supreme Court rules in the case. It could make a very narrow ruling on the very specific circumstances of this particular baker. But then, of course, even if it did that, that could be used as, you know, to piggyback on that to further extend those kinds of religious rights to discriminate. And I think if you think about it in terms of how the religious right has chipped away at abortion rights. So Roe v. Wade in 1973 was this watershed moment. And while they have long sought to overturn Roe versus Wade, and that's been a goal, in the meantime, they've chipped away at what that right actually means. And I think you have to think about Obergefell in the same way. So if they win a broad ruling in Masterpiece Cake Shop, that would be not good. But even if they win in a narrow way, that's just step one, basically. I mean, it's not like they would, I don't think that they would look at that as a victory and they're, you know, finished with the project.
Oh, no.
I think it's,
oh, no.
It's the first step.
Right. Just the beginning. Sarah Posner is with us. You have a piece up at The Nation. Justice Kennedy appears ready to undo his own legacy on LGBTQ rights. Were you in the court yesterday at the Supreme Court for the hearing?
I was.
And so your read on it, obviously everyone is basically saying it's Justice Kennedy will be the swing vote. Now, Justice Kennedy is also the one who wrote the opinion on Obergefell, undoing the Defense of Marriage Act. Because I read a number of pieces from different people who were there yesterday, who all seemed to say Kennedy seemed to have problems on both sides, but seemed more leaning towards the baker in this case.
Yeah, I think that's right. And he seemed fixated on this idea that the litigation against the baker in Colorado was motivated by religious animus. And he and some of the other conservative justices were very focused on that. On a statement made by one of the commissioners during a hearing before the Colorado Civil Rights Commission on the case, where she basically made a little colloquy about how it's not appropriate to use religion to discriminate, and there have been terrible times in history when it has been used to discriminate. Well, that was not a statement of religious animus. That was a statement of you shouldn't use religion as an excuse to discriminate.
Sure.
Yet, and this is something that ADF seized upon in its briefs. It's something that conservative media has long seized upon in the 2 years since the commissioner made that statement. And Kennedy seemed to seize upon it in the same way, interpreting it as a statement of religious animus that could undermine, in his mind, the law in Colorado, which, you know, there's no evidence that legislators passed that law in Colorado out of religious animus. They passed that law in Colorado to protect the civil rights of people based on sexual orientation and gender identity. So that, I thought, portended the possibility that Justice Kennedy could be motivated by that perception of animus in coming down with his decision in this case. And like you said, you know, he authored the majority opinion in Obergefell, and he authored the majority opinion in the line of cases expanding LGBT rights, from Romer versus Evans, which was also a case in Colorado, to Lawrence versus Texas, which struck down anti-sodomy laws, to U.S. versus Windsor, which struck down a key part of the Defense of Marriage Act. So, you know, this would be a remarkable thing for him to have created this legacy on LGBT rights to only, you know, then scale it back.
The gist of the case wasn't, they keep saying that it wasn't about the baker's problem with selling a cake to this gay couple. It was more, he had a problem with the fact that they were getting married. It wasn't about the who, but the what.
Right. And that goes to their free speech claim that ADF is making in the case. So they're making a claim that because he is a cake artist and not just a baker, that making the cake was creative expression and the government telling him how to make it or whether to make it was a violation of the compelled speech doctrine. But Kennedy's fixation on the statement of the commissioner about religion and discrimination really goes to their free exercise claim. And so all of the discussion of, like, is the baker really an artist, and is somebody else, like, is a caterer or a florist or a makeup artist, right, an artist, you know, that was discussed at length yesterday at the Supreme Court. And all of that really won't matter if there's a majority to decide the case on free exercise grounds.
Right. And so I guess, well, we wait and see what the ruling is going to be. And
right.
Chances are, they don't give you any kind of hint as to when the decision will come down. This may be put off until June.
Well, that's typically when they, you know, are issuing opinions, particularly closer to the end of June in some of these hot button, very controversial cases. So that's typical in terms of the timing, and that's what I would expect in this case.
Now, the ADF, again, we mentioned that Southern Poverty Law Center labeled them a hate group. They are focused, hyper-focused, it seems, on Christian, protecting Christian rights, basically saying that Christians are not a protected class, but they're a class that's come under intense pressure, that they've been put down, in other words, in today's atmosphere, where gay rights saw a great boom during the Obama years, that they were an endangered group, sort of. I know I'm using the wrong words.
Yeah, well, you know, they claim that Christians are being persecuted by what one of their founders called the homosexual agenda. He wrote an entire book called The Homosexual Agenda, which was filled with, you know, conspiracy theories about LGBT people. So, you know, the curious thing about all of this is that, you know, religious rights are robustly protected in the United States. There are many federal protections against discrimination on the basis of religion, which is not true of sexual orientation and gender identity. And only 21 states protect people against discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation. So, you know, and every state that has those, you know, civil rights laws in the states, just like the federal civil rights laws, protect people against discrimination on the basis of religion. So the idea that Christians' rights are being taken away by LGBT people is a little preposterous, given that LGBT people have far fewer civil rights protections than people do based on religion.
You know, yesterday in the White House press briefing, Sarah Huckabee Sanders was asked if the president believes it would be okay for the owner of a bakery to put up a sign in the window saying, "We don't serve gay people." And she basically said yes. That's what this would open the door to, isn't it?
Well, I think it potentially could open the door. I mean, I think that would be a clear violation in Colorado. That would be a clear violation of Colorado law. If the Supreme Court were to rule, well, it's okay for the baker to refuse the wedding, then I suppose then, you know, like, they could put a sign in the window that says we don't do gay weddings. But remember, there are 29 states that do not protect LGBT people against discrimination.
Right.
And so, you know, I mean, right now, the president or the president's spokesperson saying something like that is sending a clear signal.
Yeah, we're going in the wrong direction. really, really in the wrong direction. Could this conceivably be widened to roll back the Civil Rights Act, or is that a whole other,
issue? Well, I think that this is more of, it would be more of a window into how receptive the Supreme Court is to rolling back civil rights laws. This could not directly be used to roll back the Federal Civil Rights Act, which doesn't protect on the basis of sexual orientation and gender identity, for one thing. So, but I think that this is a test of how receptive the justices might be to religious-based calls for scaling back civil rights protections.
Right, but what is this do to the Establishment Clause of the Constitution? I mean, there is no state religion, but it seems more and more that that's the direction they're going.
Well, you can't challenge a Supreme Court decision based on the Establishment Clause. There's no place to challenge it to.
Right, so. That's right. Scary time. Sarah Posner, there's two articles, excuse me, up at The Nation that I will link to from my blog at NicoleSandler.com. The first is the longer one about the ADF, the Christian Legal Army behind Masterpiece Cake Shop, a special investigation into the rise of the Alliance Defending Freedom. And the other one, your article about the hearing, excuse me, yesterday at the Supreme Court. When you left there, what was your feeling overall? Were you dejected? Did you feel like this is done, or do you think that there is a chance that Kennedy might do the right thing here?
It's really hard to read those kinds of tea leaves. So I thought that he seemed more sympathetic to the Baker's claim than to the other side. But again, you know, that is not necessarily a clear signal of how he might come out in the case. And there's lots of different ways. There's several different bases on which the court could decide the case. And it's hard to know how broadly or narrowly they will decide it. So to me, you know, it's, you know, I hate to read the tea leaves, but he did seem more sympathetic to the Baker.
Are there any more cases with the ADF in the pipeline working its way through the courts?
They have one case that the court just agreed to review. So, you know, not any, so the argument won't be anytime soon, but the briefing will begin. And that case involves a challenge to a California law that requires crisis pregnancy centers to disclose to patients that the availability of abortion, contraception, and prenatal care by the state.
Oh, boy. All right. Well, we've got a long 3 years ahead of us and longer, depending on, you know, how many Supreme Court justices Trump gets to nominate.
Yes.
All right. Sarah Posner, find her at sarahposner.com and on Twitter as well at Sarah Posner. Thank you so much for your time today and very enlightening work. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Nicole.
All right. You take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye. And with that, we're just about done for the day. Oh, let me change the picture on the YouTube. I actually pre-recorded that interview earlier this morning with Sarah Posner. Scary stuff with the ADF. It's just frightening. But there are groups out there that are just pushing a state religion on us. Again, I will post links to the two articles we discussed on the blog at NicoleSandler.com, where I post the day's podcast. Quick programming note, tomorrow, of course, is Thursday. Howie Klein will be back with us, so I hope you join in for that. It is, you know, that time of year again, and if you do any of your shopping via Amazon.com, let me remind you that I have what I call the Amazon portal. If you go to NicoleSandler.com and you look on the menu, you'll see Amazon portal. If you go there, it'll take you to an Amazon page, looks like any other Amazon page. Prices are all the same. There's no difference other than I get a small commission on anything you buy using my link. So if you use that as your way into Amazon.com, it's a good way for you to help support the show. And we could certainly use your support around here. All right. Let's see. I guess that's it for the day. I don't know how much worse things can get. We'll watch the news and be back again tomorrow right here at the Nicole Sandler Show at NicoleSandler.com and on the Progressive Voices Network. Thank you, as always, for listening. And I'll see you tomorrow.